for you.
Alrighty. Everybody ready to get started today? I'll take that silence. Yeah. So let me start by taking roll so people know who's on the phone. We have Tatiana, Jonathan Drake, John McCormick, Mikey O'Connor, Mark McFadden, Vladimir, Dave Piscatello, Rick Wilhelm, Barry Rasmussen. Have I missed anyone? Seeing none, we've dedicated the bulk, obviously, of this call, and perhaps this may be the last call of the advisory group, to talk through the changes that have been made to the paper and to really raise any kind of any final questions, comments that folks have. I do note that in the draft that was circulated, we still haven't captured a point that Rod and Vlad both made and that we discussed, I think, on a call 2 weeks ago, and that is we need to have a line about the ability to amend the zone file access agreement that would allow for an aggregator and or distributor to perform those functions if they entered into an agreement directly with the registry operator. So we'll go ahead and we'll get that language added a little bit later today and circulate that back out to the group. But again, I think it's just going to be probably a very short paragraph of text, likely to follow what's now section 3.3 in the outline. So all that being said, and Mikey O'Connor makes a good point in the Adobe chat. If you're not talking, and could you please mute? There seems to be a lot of distraction, or I should say disturbance on the line this morning. So I'm going to turn the call over to Mark, as long as Mark has energy to speak. As most of you know, he's been ill the last few days and rejoined us yesterday and did a bunch of work, but I also don't want to push him too much today. So turn the call over to Mark and then follow up with Vlad and Rod making final remarks or remaining questions, et cetera, et cetera. So, Mark, do you want to go ahead?
Happy to, Craig. Yesterday afternoon my time, I sent around another version of the strategy proposal, and I think for the people who are on Adobe Connect, Craig is probably going to bring that up for us. But essentially what I want to do is go over the changes that have been made. But before I do that, I want to send out a note of thanks to all the people who contributed changes. I got a lot of substantive changes this time, really meaty, helpful stuff, and I think the strategy proposal is much better as a result. So many, many thanks to the people who contributed both on and off list to the proposal. And once again, like Craig said, I did fail to include one piece of text. I apologize for that. That's the modification of the zone file access agreement. And Craig's been kind enough to work on a short piece of text that we'd like to include in Section 3. But I'll come to that in a moment. So what I'd like to do first is basically walk through the document one last time, or one more time, I guess, recognizing that there have been some comments on the list from John McCormick. There have been some comments on the list from John Levine, and that I will be taking those on board in the final revisions. I think all of those comments were very helpful, and I see that John McCormick is on. We can talk a little bit about the question about diffs at the end of Section 6 when we get there. Let me draw your attention. Am I in control here, Craig, or are you?
I have control also.
Okay. Let's see here if I can get this to work. Oh, here we go. So, with your permission, group, I'm going to just go through it. The document's got a little bit longer than I promised, but so be it. There is a new section of the document right in front of you here on the very first page called Status of This Document. And basically, this is just something that ICANN puts at the front of every document so that it's very clear to people what the document's role is and where it currently stands. The most important thing, perhaps, is the last sentence, because it gives us guidance, or it gives ICANN guidance as well, about what's going to be happening next here in terms of the recommended implementation. So that section is brand new, not much to it, but there you go. And I'm going to just scoot through here. One of the things to notice, if we take a, again, for the people who are on Adobe Connect, you can see that there is the numbering has changed here, and that's because we've inserted a new section. We've got some other small changes here. And so in the last draft that you saw, you probably remember that there were only five sections, and now there are six. And that reflects the fact that we have this first section. Here it is. Let me bring it up. It's, again, for the people who are looking at Adobe Connect, it's section 1.0. And this is a summary. This summary is partly new work and partly taken from the concept paper. So basically, one way to view the summary is that it is an update of the material that we provided in the concept paper so that people can understand what the Zone File Access Advisory Group actually did and how it worked. The other thing is the last two paragraphs are new. The last two paragraphs basically talk about the recommendations and the consensus that was reached, and then, of course, the last paragraph declares victory. So this summary is basically, once again, a mechanism for people who are not going to read a lot of the documents and certainly not going to get to Section 5, where the real meat of the proposal is, to understand what the Zone File Access Advisory Group has done and what recommendations they've implemented. So then the next section is the problem statement. As you recall, the problem statement is something that we agreed to quite a while ago. In the second week of January, I went back and looked it up. The problem statement, a few words have been changed in the problem statement. Nothing particularly. I got some suggestions for major changes to the problem statement, but I've actually left it pretty much alone with the idea that I wanted to have some continuity between what we agreed to in January and what we accomplished in May to show that there was sort of continuity in our work. So in terms of the problem statement, 2.0 really is not much changed from what you saw in the previous draft. In section 3.0, what is the solution? I got some suggestions here for editing changes, but there isn't much in the way of content changes. The URL is included now, which it wasn't before, and there is some text in the center that is new, in the center of that last paragraph that's new, but once again, not too much. In section 3.1, what is standardization? That hasn't changed very much. We might add a couple words in here. There's been some discussion in the last 24 hours about ensuring that standardization on the part of ICANN doesn't represent sort of expanding beyond a limited mission for ICANN, that what we're really trying to do is provide a set of best practices and agreed-on formats, and we're not trying to be a standardization body. Some words along those lines are possible that you might see in there, but certainly no more than a sentence, not much to be added there. In section 3.2, there were some new things added. And again, for the Adobe Connect people, I apologize here, I'm just sort of scrolling through it now. The section that's in italics has changed quite a bit. Some of the ordering of the material in this section has changed, and there are a lot of new words in the last paragraph for the people who actually can see it on the screen. The paragraph that starts with the words, the relationship between consumers and providers of the GTLD zone data is a direct relationship. The words in this paragraph are new from the previous version. That's it in 3.2. Those are the changes there. The next section is a description or an attempt on our part to describe how the model that's been, the consensus model, has actually solved the problem. The idea here is, again, for people who aren't going to read the whole document, they understand what was the problem, what was the approach we picked, and how does it actually solve the problem. So they get through Section 3. They've got quite a bit from what we've done in the last 5 months. And the only major change here is in a paragraph, where it starts, while standardization provides an effective increase in scalability. The last sentence there, standardization was recognized by the advisory group as particularly necessary to address scaling issues no matter what model from the advisory group concept paper was eventually chosen. That's a new sentence, and that's the only addition in this section. Another change here is Section 3.4. This has actually been made stronger. I think 3.4 is so short that I don't think there's much to say. I mean, I could do a dramatic reading here. The Zone File Access Advisory Group believes that the hybrid model should apply to all new GTLD registries. The advisory group also encourages GTLDs to adopt, existing GTLDs, to adopt the hybrid model as soon as practical for the supporting registry. Now, one of the things that happens is that there's this section that I wrote about a month ago on roles. This has actually been trimmed up quite a bit. What I'm going to ask here, I'm going to pause for a section. I'm on Section 4.0, which is on the roles. And I see that there are some comments in the Adobe chat room, and I appreciate that. I think what I'm going to do is go through the whole document and then come back to those, if that's okay with the group. And someone can say yes or no in the chat room here. I see the comments scrolling by, and I'm tempted to just reply and turn to them. But I think what I'll do is get through the entire document and then come back.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, Mark.
Okay, thanks, Craig. That way, if I die during the conversation, at least I've gotten through the document. Anyway, in Section 4.0, these roles have been trimmed up quite a bit, and the intent has been, thanks, Mikey, to use these terms consistently. A couple people have come back to me, and I genuinely appreciate this, during the editing process and said, well, if you're careful to define these roles, then make sure that you use the names of the roles consistently throughout the document. And so that's what we've tried to do. And so the ZFA consumer is quite clearly the person or the organization who is getting access to the zone file data. The data provider is very, very often the CLD registry, who actually is the one providing the data, I think, quite sensibly. And then the clearinghouse is what we are going to describe in Section 5.0. So those have been tightened up quite a bit, and some good editing from the group. Section 5.0 is where all the meat of the document is, to be honest. What I expect is that people who are technically interested in zone file access will be interested in Sections 5 and 6. People who are interested in ICANN process will be interested in Sections 1, 2, and 3. There's quite a bit that's changed. Not quite a bit, but there's some that's changed here. Let me draw your attention to a little bit of it. First of all, for the people who can see, again, Adobe Connect, the last sentence on the screen is a suggestion I think I got from Vladimir. The Zone File Access Advisory Group expects the application standards to be very similar to the requirements commonly imposed on applicants by existing GTLD operators. There is another change in Section 5.1.3. 5.1.1 and 5.1.2 stayed the same.
I'm sorry, Mark?
Yeah.
Can you go back to that last edit for a second?
Are we fighting over this? Okay, there
yeah.
we go.
The advisory group expects the application standards to be very similar to the requirements commonly imposed on applicants. I just don't understand what that means.
Okay. Application standards represent the process by which consumers apply for access. So it's the mechanics of actually applying. It's signing for the contract, gaining access to the information that would get you the agreement, the README files, and things like that. It's also the process it's the mechanics of the contractual relationship. And I think one of the things that someone said to me was that, well, what the advisory group is really saying here is that that application process is going to be very similar to the application process that's already in place.
I, Okay, I got that. I see applicants, and I just think of applicants new GTLD round. And
So it's applicants for zone file access here.
Okay.
The current requirements, so basically moving those forward, right?
Yeah, and here again, I'm open to text. I mean, if that wasn't clear, then I'm certainly open to text, and maybe just inserting the letters ZFA, imposed on ZFA applicants is enough there. For that last sentence in 5.1, if there's someone who would like to contribute some text to actually make that clearer, I'd certainly be open to that.
Okay.
Okay, so as I said, 5.1.1 and 5.1.2 were not changed, the method of access and the access protocol. Although, I will say in 5.1.2, Vladimir had a chat with me about the access protocol, recognizing that FTP is, I think, even older than Mikey and me, and has all sorts of limitations. The question was, well, should we even specify the access protocol? And I left this the way it was, and this is something we can, as a group, discuss. I left this the way it was because I think it's important to specify a baseline protocol for access that if you provide as part of an implementation plan enhanced access models, you know, like some sort of peer-to-peer methodology, some sort of other provisioning methodology, not just transport methodology, but a completely different provisioning technology, then you could do that as part of an implementation plan. But I think as part of a strategy, you want to provide a baseline. And so I got a question from Vlad about 5.1.2, but I left things the way they were, and perhaps we can make a note to have that conversation at a later time. I got a question about 5.1.3. I think this was Dave who suggested the last sentence here. All FTP servers will be named in the ICANN.org namespace. This is an extension to the convention already applied to WIS servers. This is something that we talked about in the small group for standards. And it seemed to be something that people were pretty comfortable with, and I've already talked to Diana about this, and they're comfortable with it as well. Moving on, the next place where there was a change was in 5.1.6 about compression, and several people straightened me out on, this is the frequency and timing of updates, so I haven't gotten to. Let me go back here. 5.1.5, some people straightened me out on compression, and I haven't heard from either John or John Levine, or I think John McCormick also wrote me about this, about making sure that I got the compression modes correct, the tools that we were going to use. So it would be good to have someone take a look at that pair. That's very, very simple. Make sure that in the end, to get that right, that GZIP is going to be the thing that we suggest as the mandatory compression mechanism. Then there was a question. There was a lot of discussion on last week's call about the frequency and timing of updates. And so I've removed some text here, and I got a lot of questions on this section, the 5.1.6. I had put in some minimums in the previous draft, and reflecting on the fact that some zones are bigger than others and the churn rate was bigger, I suggested that the rate of change might be different for each one of the zones. And that got quite a bit of pushback. On last week's call. So in 5.1.6, you'll see that I've taken it out completely. Instead, the only sentence that remains is the words, the frequency must be often enough to ensure that the delta between current and previous versions is reasonable. Now, what's reasonable, I don't think we agreed to that or how you decide what's reasonable, but that's the text that's currently there. And then the registry itself is responsible for establishing that frequency. And they're responsible, this is a suggestion that John Levine made, is that let the registry set that frequency and document it in a README file so that the applicants, the people actually gaining access to the data, know the frequency and can count upon it. In fact, the original suggestion was that that README file not only contain the frequency, but when the files are going to be updated, so that, you know, if we know it's going to be at midnight every night, as an example, that the people who are consumers of the data can count on the fact that, you know, at 12:01 they could fire off a script or a cron job or something and actually go get the data. So that's the big changes of 5.1.5 and 5.1.6. There was a lot of discussion on the list yesterday about 5.1.7, and here are the changes that I've made. I don't believe we're done here, but we're very, very close. The situation here is that the small group actually asked that all new registries agree to be should produce their zone file in a common format, and that common format is here in section at the top of section 5.1.7. But the recognition was that there will be legacy, that we know that there are three legacy zone formats, and that the group also accepts that while for new registries, we'd like to have this one that you see documented here at the top of 5.1.7 to be in place, that we also recognize that legacy registries providing zone file data will use one of three formats, and that's what you see at the bottom of page 9 and the top of page 10. This is a major change from the previous draft because it inverts the order, and it makes clear that what the Zone File Access Advisory Committee wanted was a single common format, and that's what's documented up front. But the advisory committee also sees that there are three formats in common use that are relatively easy to parse. And so this avoids the problem of, you know, the TTL problem that was discussed on the list and so forth. So the idea behind this is to say that the Zone File Access Advisory Committee wants to have a single common format from the new registries, the new data providers, and recognizes that the legacy providers have three formats, and we don't want to see sort of expansion of those kinds of formats. That's the change there. I did see there was some conversation at the end of the day yesterday just add a few more things in this section. But I think we're very close in this section to being done. So then we'll move on here to the clearinghouse. The clearinghouse did not change very much. The description didn't change at all. In section 5.2.1, there's a few changes. And that's this last paragraph that you see at the bottom of page 10. All parties who agree to abide by standard agreement are eligible by ZFA. This entire paragraph is new. And this was a suggestion, for instance, this came from a variety of people, as it turns out. This was interesting that a lot of people sent me comments about this section. For instance, the very last sentence, the existing process of entering into ZFA agreements is normally paper-based. It's worth studying whether or not the introduction of the clearinghouse can have an electronic process. That's from Vladimir, for instance. The stuff about words about how what measures the registries take to verify contact information, that came from Dave and me. So there were lots of comments in that section. So that paragraph has changed there. In 5.2.2, not much has changed here. There were some small, very small editing comments. And let me draw your attention to the second-to-last bullet point in this list, where it says serve as a single point of contact for customer care. In the older draft, there was a section of this bullet point which actually talked about the formal notification between consumers and the clearinghouse after a suspension. And it was noted by a couple people that it was not obvious that the clearinghouse would actually have a formal role to play in a suspension, that if a registry decided because of malpractice or malpractice on the part of a consumer, that there was a need to intervene and stop access, the clearinghouse wouldn't have necessarily a formal notification role there. And so that was actually removed from the draft. And that's That's the major change there in 5.2.2. In 5.3, I'm going to make it here. 5.3, access mechanics, this section is actually pretty much the same. There are the sentence that you see at the very bottom of page 11 and top of page 12 is new, but the rest of it is actually the text from the previous draft. And then finally, in the closing sections here, the implications section has just been edited. There's no real content changes there. And then in the next steps section, in 6.1, that first sentence is new. The Zone File Access Advisory Group was formed to develop and recommended a method of enhanced zone file access for new DLTs for inclusion in the applicant guidebook. I see a typo there, and someone will note that inclusion in the applicant guidebook. And then finally, in section 6.2, there has been a lot. These two paragraphs that you see here have changed. It's this reflection, and this is a place where, when Craig introduced the sort of talk this morning, this is a place where I genuinely think that we could add the language about changing the zone file access agreement so that data providers and they could enter into third-party agreements that change that we've been talking about. This might be one of the places to do it. This is another place. I had a kind of an offline conversation with John McCormick about the diff files and whether or not what clarity we should provide in terms of the diff files and what we should say in a strategy paper versus an implementation paper. This is a place for us to get that right, and John sent some very helpful comments to the list on that topic. Finally, page 14, Rod has contributed some notes on the cost model, and this is a couple paragraphs that basically describes the cost model and what the assumptions were and how the assumptions actually affect what the costs to both providers of the data and consumers of the data look like. This is a conversation that the co-chairs and Craig should have, but it seems to me that the cost model ought to be public and ought to be put on the ZFA Advisory Group website and then a URL referenced in here so that people, if they want to go look at it, can see it. Because I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, I think that's a substantial piece of work by the advisory group and very, very well done and ought to get publication. Finally, another new section that's in the document is the appendix, the obligatory participants in the advisory group page. And so if you see some things that are wrong there or misspelled your name or done anything wrong, please let me know, and I will fix that immediately. I will say, once again, that I got a lot of great substantive comments between the first and second draft here, and I hope that we're close. I think maybe what I'll do, for the people who are on Adobe Connect, just close your eyes for a moment. I'm going to go very fast back to the beginning here. And then, Craig, perhaps the best way to do this is to simply open it up to comments and to just move right back through the document again. Does that seem reasonable to you?
Yeah, I think a good idea.
I know that people have been commenting in the Adobe chat room here. Let me look here. Let's go to section 3.3. That ambulance is actually coming for me.
And me too. Oh, it's coming for you.
Yeah. Let's see here. I think what I'd like to do, I think I should go quiet for a second and see whether or not people have would like to... maybe the first way to do this is, are there any big things that are missing? Or are we at the point where we're just doing final editing.
Something about the access agreement.
Right. So we need to agree to some text there. And I agree with Vlad. Not only do we need to agree on the text, but we need to agree to where to stick that in the document.
Yeah, I think the last, what you just pointed out, Mark, is kind of going in the implementation section, or that very last bit of text that you talked about, or it could go at the very end of section 3.3, you know, something along the lines of, you know, finally the group also proposes the zone file access agreement provision on grant of access be amended to permit the aggregation and distribution of zone file data provided the consumer and the registry execute an individual with one another to permit this activity. It's something as simple as that.
Okay. That's good. Okay, let me follow up on so that's maybe the one piece of major text that we don't have here. I see several people suggesting some typo changes, and I will take all of those into consideration. But if Jonathan's on the phone, maybe I could ask him to talk about his point on CNAMEs. If I could get him off of mute.
Unmute. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Now we can.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mark. Certainly. Well, you know, the concept here is that, you know, there could be .foo.zfa.icann.org. And the point would be, rather than have an IP address assigned to that, which would be static and require the involvement and requests and process for IANA, so there'd be a Siberian role there and perhaps a delay, would be rather than use that naming convention as an IP address, that it would be defined as a CNAME back to a registry managed domain. And that way, you know, if the registry decided to put it on multiple IP addresses to handle the load or had to move or change the IP addresses, it could be done without any disruption and there would be no delay introduced in requesting it with IANA.
Okay, the question I have there is, are you familiar with how we do it for WHOIS? Because I don't think we use CNAMEs for the WHOIS servers. I tell you what, I think, I see that Rod and Vlad think this is a good idea, too. I think it's a good idea. Let me follow up, and I will do this even while we're on the call. Let me follow up with IANA and make sure that IANA doesn't have a problem with it. And if IANA doesn't have a problem with it, then I think we should put it right in the draft.
Great.
I can say that we used a similar technique in .tel with assigning addresses to .tel hosting, and I can say that it worked perfectly.
Okay, great. I think the thing for me to do is take an action item to follow up on that and make sure that IANA is okay with that. All right, so there's two things. Besides the typo, Vladimir, do you want to talk about FTP at all?
Well, I wonder if we should we should mention the protocol at all, because to be honest, FTP, when was it designed? 25 years ago or so. So I'm not sure if the advisory group if it's really the function of the advisory group to determine what the specific protocol will be. Maybe there are better alternatives, and this is something for the implementation phase.
I'm sorry, Craig. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask what's the recommended change then there?
For example, we could just remove the words, the standard access methodologies, FTP, and leave it as access scenario is simply for the consumer to connect to the registry's file server from the IP identified and the credentials and so on.
Vlad, this is Dave. You know, while I have an enormous amount of sympathy for wanting to change FTP, I mean, one of the things that we've been trying to do is identify some conventions, and we haven't wanted to change too much for the existing registries. The word I would have is if we said connect to file server, that the new gTLDs would feel free to use SMB MFS and share mounts if they so chose, right? And and I think we can always come back at a later time and say, it really would be worthwhile to have a broader bit of things that we would recommend. But I don't think that we need to actually make that recommendation here.
Well, if you put FTP there for a reason, if you think that's really reasonable to mention it, then I'm not objecting. It just seemed to me that mentioning a 25-year-old protocol as a recommended standard is not good. But, well, if there is a sense that it's worth leaving as it is, then I'm fine with it.
Here would be part of my argument, Vlad, would be that you need to specify some baseline, some sort of basic level of access. And FTP is I don't want to say lowest common denominator, but that's what comes out of my mouth here. It's I think that what we should do is in Section 6, go back and say to the implementation team that one of the things that they should consider, besides other data products and relationships between the ability of third parties to actually build new byproducts of the data, we should also say that the implementation team should carefully consider more modern access protocols as alternatives to FTP, something like that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, let's do that.
The other thing outstanding is that discussion about value-added services. So I believe Rod wanted to leave that section there or even expand it. Rod, would you like to talk about it?
Which section is that, Vlad?
It's I think it's 4.2. Oh, sorry, 6.2. 6.2. Yeah.
So this is in 6.2. This is where I think this is where I kind of let the group down here. I think that the value-added services, the ability to change the zone file access agreement. I think this is the section where we should insert the text that Craig is going to be suggesting. And I think I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think that he has some text here that he's going to contribute to the list, and then we could get some consensus around that. I think this is the place to do it because this is it's while it's part of the strategy to do that, I think it's important that the implementation team is charged with the responsibility of coming up with the way for the actual mechanics of doing it.
Yeah, so for doing the actual, making a recommendation to make a modification to the current agreement belonging to 6.2, I was thinking that we might want to have something in either 5.4 or I think you mentioned 3.3, just talking about the rationality behind why you would make that recommendation in 6.2. Otherwise, it kind of comes out out of nowhere.
That's a really good point.
There's been desire for both two. I guess it solves two desires. One is this desire for value-added services is kind of blocked today, and the other is that some registries have expressed an interest in having a third party provide this service. Basically, they want to have a third party that just handles this for them, and they can't do it under the current arrangement. So, takes care of those issues.
I can tell you what my concern is. I would like it to be clear that in the paper that these value-added services are not part of the registry function or the clearinghouse function.
Right, that makes sense.
So, Craig, are you going to suggest any clarification in regards to this, or shall I provide some alternative wording?
Well, I mean, Rod just brought up the point about the value-add services, and that wasn't in the text that I'm trying to draft while I listen to you guys talk at the same time, and I'm not doing that very well. If you want to go ahead and draft a sentence or two that could be added on to what I give to Mark, or I could just send you individually what I'm proposing and have you tweak it with the remarks you just made. We can then send that off to the list.
Okay, that'll work for me.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, that's great. Can I also stay in Section 6.2? Oh, and we said that we would have Barry have the floor next. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. This is Barry. Just to kind of dovetail on what Vladimir was bringing up on page 13, the second paragraph was where it specifically talks about the diff files. I had thought that I had perceived that to be a value-added service as well, and while I definitely would support something like that being offered down the road, the availability of diff files is not something that the clearinghouse can provide, so I'm wondering if maybe the readers of this document may be confused by the fact that this might be included in the implementation section when it's something that the clearinghouse wouldn't be chartered to do. So just some clarity around that. Thank you.
Yeah, Barry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I was just going to say the last two sentences of that second paragraph are a half a font size bigger than the rest, so you might want to change that. But thank you.
Other folks have comments on in response to what Barry just said about the diffs information? Because when I read it this morning, or when I read it again this morning, it almost felt to me a little out of place. That certainly could be something that would be covered during implementation, but it felt like it was hanging out there to me relatively unattached.
Perhaps it needs an explanation what a diff really is and the benefit of the diff for the consumer.
And this is Barry. Again, if we were recommending one of the other models where that third-party provider would provide it, then I could see how it would be useful. But, again, under the clearinghouse mode as a standalone, I'm not really sure how they could offer that. Again, because I perceived it to be the value-added service that would be offered by individual registries as they wanted to promote that part of their business.
So this is Mark again, and I think to Barry and John, and in fact to the whole group here, this paragraph that starts with the words, "The implementation planning will include an examination of the potential for third-party aggregation," and continues on like that, I think this paragraph is pretty problematic the way it's written now and ought to be replaced by something that has a lot more clarity. And so what I'll do is, oh, there it goes.
Yeah,
oops, there was, Yeah, I'll take the responsibility for coming up with a replacement, a complete replacement for that paragraph that tries to address John's suggestion that we'd be very clear about what the purpose and value of the diff files are, but also deal with Barry and Vladimir's suggestion that we'd be very clear that this is not something that's happening at the clearinghouse, but this is a potential future data product that would be done by a possible third party. Craig, I'm going to go on hold for a second.
Okay.
Okay, I'm back here.
Okay. Yeah, are you okay for to continue on the call?
Yeah. I don't go until this afternoon. Let's see here. I think when I was just interrupted there, what I was suggesting was that this very last paragraph is the source of a lot of not so much confusion. It's just not it's not very crisp. It's not very clear. And we should address John and Barry. Well, the whole group, I think, has consensus around what this should say. And what I'll do is I'll put together a proposal for replacement of this paragraph and send that to the list. How's that for a way to move forward?
That's a good idea. Can we get rid of the mechanical diff phrases? It's kind of jarring. It's more jargon than pure English.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Thanks, John. Let me ask if there are any other major things. I have a list of four to-dos here. I'll go over them in a second, but before I do, let me ask if there are any, from the group, if there are any other major items that need to be taken care of.
Well, one minor item. Could the legacy file format be included in the README file? I think I suggested in the email. As in, which if there's going to be a README file in the FTP directory of registry, it would actually include, in addition to the frequency of the updates, the legacy file format in use.
I will definitely include that.
Mrs. Vladimir, I have one other thing to talk about. It's in 4.3, and the part that's talking about notifications.
Okay.
I would rather say that the mechanics of registries notifying their customers should be left to the implementation phase rather than included here, because there is one solution where all correspondence is going through the clearinghouse. The other option is that registries notify customers directly, and I'm not sure if we're in a position to decide now which way is the best one.
You're thinking of 4.3 here?
Yeah.
I don't think 4.3. That's a description of the clearinghouse. The process is somewhere else.
Was I looking in the previous version of the? Did you change anything in the very last version that you circulated recently?
It might be 5.3 here. Let's see here. Let's again. I apologize for the people who are on Adobe Connect. Yeah, it could very well be 5.3 that you're talking about now. Maybe what I could suggest here, Vlad, is for you to look at 5.3 of the newest version and maybe send me some text.
Okay, I'll look at it once again. I'll send my suggestion to the list then.
Thank you. Well, we've taken an hour. Let me go over what I think is my to-do list or the to-do list for the document. The zero item is that some people have given me some indicated some typos both online in real time here, and I appreciate that, and I will take care of those. There is the new text that Craig is suggesting. That's item number one for me in terms of the to-do list. And finding places for that, both in Section 6, but also, as Arad has pointed out, it needs to occur earlier in the document so that there's time for it. Item number two on my list is the C name changes. I've already written a note to IANA trying to make sure that that's okay with them. If it is okay, we'll explicitly put it in Section 5. I think that's a great suggestion. Number three is the section on FTP. I will talk a little bit more about that in terms of providing a baseline for access protocols, but also in Section 6.2, talk about that suggest that the implementation team needs to follow up and look at more modern access protocols or transport strategies. In Section 4, I promise that I will get to the list. A replacement for the last paragraph of Section 6.2, that's the very confusing section that talks about too much at once, really. It talks about diffs, it talks about third-party aggregation of data and so forth. It's like a catch-all paragraph, and it needs to be replaced. We'll work to replace it. Item 5 on my list is John's suggestion of making sure that the legacy file format actually appears in the registry's README file, and that should be explicit in the in Section 5.2. And then Vlad has suggested that there be changes in the communication procedure between the clearinghouse and registry in Section 5.3. And he may have already sent something to the list. I just saw something go by. So those are the six items I have. I've also, like I said, a zeroth item is that I do have some typos that people have sent me. And now I think what I should do is open it up to conversation in the sense that is there anything I've missed? If these six changes are made along with the typos, do people feel pretty good? And Craig, maybe I could suggest that we hand this over to the co-chairs to try to get some closure.
Excellent idea, Mark.
I do have, this is Vladimir, I do have a proposal in regards to the procedure, how can we move forward and finalize the document. So I think we have discussed all the items on which we were a little bit further from consensus. I think we have discussed them all today. If there is anything else, just feel free to speak up. So I suggest that we open the next phase on the list, which is for final changes, which probably should be some just editorial ones or some clarificational changes or whatever. My suggestion is that it can run until, let's say, Sunday, end of day. Then, for example, during Monday, Tuesday, we could generate the candidate final version for that, for the document. If Mark will survive, by Tuesday, he could wish to do that final touch. And then probably we still have a few days left before May 15th, which is the deadline. And then I suggest that there will be only room for yes or no votes. I mean, that I don't suggest that we necessarily need to vote because it seems like there were no critical objections to the document. But these few days are just for the last opportunity to, like, anyone raise any significant objections one may have. But otherwise, I would suggest that the next version of the document would be considered final unless we have any objections. In that case, we will not need a call next Thursday unless any other serious issues arise.
I'll second that. That's Rod.
I'll third it.
That sounds like a good game plan going forward. Obviously, if Mark is under the, you know, continues to be under the weather and is not able to, you know, work beyond today, obviously I will finish up whatever we need to do and get materials circulated to the list and you know, wrap this up by next week per our commitment. Is there any other business we need to cover now? Hearing none, you know, Mark very carefully outlined 6 items to modify in the next in the next day or so, and Vlad talked about edits being due by Sunday, so the final version could be turned around on Monday or Tuesday, and you know, last final comments maybe by like Wednesday, and then turn the paper around to ICANN and for posting Thursday. And when I say posting, I envision that the strategy proposal and the cost model spreadsheet would get posted on the AZF information page. At this point, there'll be a standalone public comment period on the strategy proposal, but that in its inclusion to the bigger picture applicant guidebook, there will of course be a public comment on the next version of the guidebook. I think also that Greg Rattray's security team is in the process of developing an overall paper on the status of the measures to mitigate malicious conduct in new GTLDs. I think that when that concept was originally circulated back in October, there might have been 9 or 10 items on that. And I think the intent of this new paper is to provide a status on those 9 or 10 items if they've all survived. So I'm thinking that there may be a comment period on that paper, but that's yet to be decided. I just wanted to be clear that I don't see a public comment period solely on the strategy proposal from this group, but either as part of the malicious conduct explanatory memoranda status update or as part of the overall public comment that will run on the applicant guidebook. So before we wrap up and close out and declare success, you know, I would like to thank all of the volunteers that participated, in particular Rod and Vlad, for chairing this work and contributing so much, as did many members of the group, to producing what I think is a really thorough document that can then be turned into something that's implementable as part of the ongoing new GTLD program implementation details. As the paper says, I think it's envisioned that ICANN staff will largely be responsible for developing the implementation plan, but that it will undergo a series of iterations with public comment, at which point members of this group and any member of the community, for that matter, could chime in about issues and issues that have been presented in the implementation plan. my expectation, and I don't have this, you know, on any firm commitment from either Greg Ratcher or from Kurt Pritz, but it's my expectation that the new GTLD team is going to accept this proposal as it is and basically send a group of folks off to say, now, you know, figure out how you make this work, and by the way, make sure you get plenty of community feedback on it so when we actually launch, we have something that's workable. So that was a lot of random thoughts strewn together in the last few moments, but again, I want to go back to saying thank you, and I do want to turn the floor back over to Rod and Vladimir for any closing remarks before we break and adjourn.
Thank you, Craig. This is Rod, and I'd like to echo your thanks to all the volunteers, and I'd especially like to thank Mark and yourself and Dave and the ICANN staff that helped, you know, really get this thing done very quickly, I think fairly efficiently for an ICANN-related process. This may be a record setter, I don't know. But I think we started with a fairly broadly defined issue and managed to, without a whole lot of rancor, move to a solution that seems to be workable for pretty much everybody concerned. So thank you all for doing what you could to come up with great ideas, and there wasn't a whole lot of politics and infighting, which is just awesome, I think, in this space, and maybe we can have some more working groups that have similar results in the future. That was my 2 cents. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Rod. This is Vladimir. I also think that the work of this group was a success, and that we really reached consensus not only among ourselves, but we produced really some good proposal, which seems to be accepted rather well by the registries, and I hope by ICANN. I would really like to thank all the volunteers, and especially Mark, Craig, Dave, Rod, who provided very valuable input, and it has been a tremendous pleasure to work with you all. I'm looking forward to meeting you in Brussels or on any other ICANN meetings.
I guess I'd add one thing. In Brussels, we'll try and get an informal bar session together to raise a glass to toast our success.
Actually, Rod, something you just said made me think of something as it relates to Brussels. I think there is an intention to do a, and I don't know what it's going to be called exactly, but some kind of workshop on malicious conduct, mitigating malicious conduct activities. And I know that Andy Welch has been asked to do something around this high security concept, and that I've been asked to do something around the output from the Zone File Access Advisory Group. So there will be some workshop and some presentation of materials, and to the extent that Vlad or Rod or any group of the member, any member of the group for that matter would like to get involved in that, if you can let me know, I'll just make sure that your name is in the mix. No more work for you, but I did want the group to be aware that something like that will happen in Brussels, and I would likely be the primary person, or myself or Dave Piscatello, and we certainly could involve you folks as well. So I think we're good. I think we have another iteration or two with minor revisions based upon today's call. We've all said lots of thank yous and pats on the backs and words of appreciation. So I think we'll go ahead and close out with one more thank you, and let's continue, at least for the next several days, working the remaining details out on the list. Go ahead and cancel next week's scheduled call. And for those that will travel to Brussels at the end of June, I look forward to seeing you then.
Good job.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, sir.